This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. This show often reports on the ongoing argument over intellectual property rights. On one side, the media industries that spend billions making television, film, and music products. On the other, the ordinary people who sit before flickering screens, slicing and dicing those products for their own amusement, and sharing them in podcasts and blogs and encrypted networks, an arena collectively called the dark net. Here's an example of what you can hear there, a mashup of presidential speeches with the song Sympathy for the Devil.
That's news to me.
In today's world, direct communication is a ticket to success. So tonight I propose a plan to destroy you once and for all. In the next 4 years, I will work with my fellow Americans,
take a request
with the ultimate goal, the total control of your soul. Wield the real art. Next, please stand up.
To the denizens of the darknet, it's artistic license. To the media industry, it's theft, and it must be stopped. But, as we'll hear in the rest of this segment, placing digital locks on intellectual property may only breed better lockpickers and the ill will of consumers. We begin with J.D. Lassica, author of the new book Darknet, Hollywood's War Against the Digital Generation. Lassica says the darknet harbors two kinds of people, the creative and the criminal.
Some people just don't want to pay, you know, $10 to see the latest Hollywood movie. I think that's wrong. But other people want to take advantage of these kinds of works and remix them and weave them into their own works and make a new statement. So these are the kinds of creative works that are technically illegal. And we're going to see what happens when this kind of collision between traditional media forms and these new emerging media forms come into play.
This does seem like the classic example of an immovable object and an irresistible force. Technology and the creative spirit and the desire to remix the president's speeches to the Rolling Stones being the irresistible force. And ownership rights, based on the blood, sweat, tears, ingenuity, and capital of the owners, the immovable object. The collision, as you said, is in progress. At the moment, what's happening?
Traditional media needs to become aware of what's happening out there and to, you know, loosen up a little. Don't be afraid of losing control over what you're calling your intellectual property. Let it go out there and capture new audiences. This example that we're just talking about here was Sympathy for the Devil, and probably today's kids in high school and college probably never heard of it. So here the Rolling Stones are finding new audiences for that kind of music. But what I wanted to emphasize is that the technology is outpacing the law. It's outpacing what kind of conversations are happening in Congress today, where actually there's an impulse to sort of crack down on this kind of behavior rather than to enable it or to celebrate it. One of the episodes in the book was that I actually wrote to all seven major Hollywood studios asking for permission to use little snippets of their movies in a new home movie that I wanted to make with my five-year-old son. So like 15 seconds of Ice Age or 30 seconds of Mary Poppins. And six out of the seven studios flatly said no.
There's a story in your book about an amazing fellow who reshot the entirety of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Tell me that story.
Well, there were three kids who were about 12 years old when this whole thing began. They saw Raiders of the Lost Ark on the big screen, and they basically said to themselves, this is so totally cool. I want to do this, too. So they began a little project filming a remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark in their backyards. And it basically took them about 7 years to finish. And at the end of it, they had a little screening in their hometown. Everybody came out to see it. Wild applause.
They recreated it shot for shot, costume for costume, special effect by special effect, no?
Right. You know, they got some garden snakes in the backyard. They had a dog sub in for a monkey, that sort of thing. But other than that, it was a very faithful recreation of the entire something like 80-minute work. They basically pull it off, and people who've seen this were kind of blown away by the whole thing. So the trouble is that they never got the rights to show this, other than in their living rooms, to anybody outside of their immediate families. So under the law, under copyright law, it's a derivative work, which means that you need the permission of the copyright holder, which, you know, no studio is about to give. So nobody's going to be able to see this movie ever until the copyright on Raiders expires in about 100 years from now. You know, I don't think anybody would argue that this kind of fan filmdom is hurting anybody. But again, it just shows that the laws are out of step with what people are doing with their works.
Is there any reason to think that the United States Congress understands the issues as you've presented them, or do you think they're just going to listen to an aggrieved Hollywood and give Disney et al. All of the further protection that they request?
It's been a one-sided conversation up until now, so that the movie companies, the music labels, they've got their folks up on Capitol Hill repeating over and over and over the word stealing and piracy. So there has to be some nuance brought into the conversation. There has to be some sort of understanding that if some of these innovative new technologies that are coming down the line as far as file sharing and BitTorrent, if these kinds of things are outlawed, that'll just drive people further into the darknet, into the underground, make more people into lawbreakers, and ultimately it's going to harm the culture.
J.D., thanks very much.
Good to be here. Thanks a lot.
J.D. Lasica is author of Darknet, Hollywood's War Against the Digital Generation.